It's Paul Smolin, MD, your PEDcast host, bringing you informative and entertaining knowledge on a wide range of parenting and child health topics. You have parenting questions. He has answers. It's portable, practical pediatrics on your schedule. And here is your PEDcast host, Dr. Paul Smolin.
Good day, and welcome to my pediatric blog. Portable, practical pediatrics is our mission. I am Dr. Paul Smolin, a genuine board-certified pediatrician with now 32 years of practice experience. I am very excited to have as my returning guest today Dr. Andy Farah, a practicing psychiatrist, chief of psychiatry at High Point Hospital, and an expert in psychopharmacology to educate my listeners and me on an important subject for parents, how to recognize and help the overly anxious child. Dr. Farah practices psychiatry at High Point Hospital and sees a variety of psychiatric illness every day, including anxious children. Welcome, Dr. Andy Farah.
Thank you, Paul. So good to be back with you again.
Yes, I am so happy to have you back. So let's get right to it. Dr. Farah, would you give us an idea of the scope of the problem, you know, of anxious kids? It seems to me that there are a lot of anxious kids out there.
There are. Of course, I'm an adult psychiatrist, a general psychiatrist, but we do see a lot of young people, a lot of kids and teens, simply because there's so few psychiatrists who do see them now, such a shortage. So we are wearing a lot of hats these days. And I think that at least 20%, maybe on a good day, 40% of the kids that are referred to us do have some type of anxiety disorder, something going on in the realm of anxiety disorders.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it seems to me, you know, when I started in pediatrics, I don't know if I just didn't recognize them and they were there or they weren't there, but there are a lot more anxious kids today than there were when I started in pediatrics.
So our language has gotten better at describing it. I think you're right. You probably saw them, but they were something else. You know, they were headaches or stomach aches or something along those lines.
Right. I think we accept psychiatric illness, if you want to call it that. We'll use those terms more freely, and they don't have the stigma that they did, I think, when I started in medicine. So how does a parent recognize anxiety in their child? What would you tell them to look for?
Yeah, and many, it's very easy for an adult to say, I have anxiety or I have panic attacks, and those have almost become buzzwords, you know, in the population. But for a kid, I mean, it's more behavioral a lot of times. You'll see irritability, you'll see the insomnia or wanting to sleep too much. They'll have trouble with concentration, schoolwork, and of course, avoidance, you know, avoiding school, avoiding friends, that type of thing. And of course, there's the whole physical manifestation of anxiety, such as the headaches that I mentioned briefly, or irritable bowel syndrome. You know, a lot of us in psychiatry consider that a form of anxiety disorder, just with a GI manifestation. There's, of course, cyclical vomiting in children, which we know is at least exacerbated by anxiety. And of course, think about the somatization disorders, the kids who just have lots of sort of unexplained physical symptoms. And one that doesn't get a lot of play, nobody talks about a lot, tics, you know, tic disorders in kids. The vast majority of tic disorders are transient and anxiety-related, anxiety-generated, anxiety-exacerbated. But the good news is that the vast majority of tic disorders do go away by the time that child is, you know, 11, 12, 13.
So you're saying that some children are going to be brought to their doctors with the family and the teachers thinking they have ADD because they don't concentrate very well, and yet they really have problems with mood and specifically anxiety. Is that what would you say that's true?
Right. That's a fair statement. And there's so much comorbidity. You know, a lot of kids with depression present with prominent anxiety. In fact, when we diagnose a child with a specific anxiety disorder, 2/3 of the time, within 6 months, that child is diagnosed with depression as well. So a lot of overlap there with some of these disorders.
Right. Okay. Well, what I see is a lot of sleep problems, a lot of headaches and stomach aches, as you say. You know, that's the common way pediatricians see anxious kids. We do also see a lot of children who chronically hyperventilate, and they're dizzy, and they feel they have spells of fatigue and dizziness. The skin pickers, of course, they're usually very anxious people, not always, I guess, but usually. And one thing that a psychiatrist taught me was difficulty swallowing a pill in an older child. That's a clue that there's probably anxiety. And I had this really interesting kid one time who came in with an infection on the side of his finger, and it was from picking. And, you know, so we dealt with the infection, and I, as he was leaving, I said, well, you know, I'm going to suggest you take this medicine. It comes in a liquid form or a pill form, and, you know, can you swallow a pill? He was like 13 years old, and he just broke down, and he said, no, I can't swallow a pill. And so I told him about this, you know, sometimes people with pill problems have anxiety problems, and out floods. You know, he has trouble leaving the house. He goes through rituals of washing his hands and touching the doorknobs. And he was a full-blown obsessive-compulsive child, which is, I guess, an extreme form of anxiety disorder. And, you know, the clue was he couldn't swallow a pill.
Isn't that a fascinating story? Because just a routine question, routine exam, and suddenly you open that Pandora's box, you know, where you didn't realize there was a well-defined disorder. You bring up OCD. You know, I guess it is time to talk about more specific disorders. And OCD, obsessive-compulsive disorder in kids, fairly common. And you mentioned it, the skin pickers, the hair pullers, the nail biters, those can be forms of OCD. Now, as you know, we don't like to give drugs to kids, right? If we don't have to, and there's a subset of kids that absolutely do need to take pharmaceutical products. But fortunately, with OCD, the best option we have is something that's natural. It's over the counter. It's usually $12 a month, and it's N-acetylcysteine, right? NAC, N-acetylcysteine. So it's just an amino acid. But I find if you put 600 milligrams a day in that child's body, the OCD just clears right up. So it works better than the SRIs for particularly skin pickers and hair pullers. So that's a nice, real carved out diagnosis that you can do something for that's natural.
Yeah, that's great. You have other tips of things for anxious kids?
Well, certainly, you know, in just the generalized anxiety, you know, good exercise, good sleep rituals, you know, just not having a lot of stimulation in the evening, avoiding caffeine, things that are stimulating, good nutrition, of course, a lot of fish in the diet, and of course, just having an open dialogue with kids. So those are the basic common sense things. Now, if you have to use something for anxiety, we can often use hydroxyzine, right? Generic Vistaril, something like that is not a benzodiazepine. There's a new ADD prescription medication, right? It's one of those medical foods. It's fish oil based, and it's called Vyarin, V-A-Y-A-R-I-N. So I've been using a lot of that in kids, and that takes a little while to kick in. So they may have to take it, you know, 3 or 4 weeks before they feel the full benefit. But wouldn't you rather have the child on fish oil than Ritalin, you know? And of course, the B vitamins in a lot of depressive disorders are very, very safe. So there's a new compilation of B vitamins called Enlyte, E-N-L-Y-T-E. And what's important about this one is that these are the reduced forms that do cross the blood-brain barrier. So when I see a child with depression, I often start with that compound rather than go with the antidepressant. Because with the antidepressant comes, of course, the suicide warning and the side effects and so forth. So yeah, there's a lot of tricks out there. And I think with kids, we always think, well, with any patient, we think safety first. And it's just nice to know there's some natural remedies out there for some of these things.
Oh, those are great tips. Great tips.
Thanks.
Okay, so what about the world of digital technology that kids are finding themselves in now, what adults are finding themselves in as well. Do you think that that's a factor here?
Yeah, you know, we are all under the influence of way too much stimulation. And it's really amazing. You know, you'll have kids while they're riding to school watching videos or playing on their, you know, computer games or whatever. And it's just there's really no downtime for the brain, and your brain does need downtime. I mean, I know that every evening when I come home, I just need downtime. And there was something to that. You know, when my dad left his office, it must be 40 years ago now, I mean, he would lock the door, and you couldn't reach the guy. And that was very healthy for him to know that there was what sometimes is only 8 hours, but maybe there were 12 hours where you just could not reach the guy. And that's what we need. We need less stimulation, less access. And I think we're kind of creating some ADD out there because kids are so used to constant activity and stimulation now.
Yes, yes. Well, so that's another reason to get the electronics out of their rooms, particularly because, you know, sleep is the ultimate turning off your brain, and you know, that's when they need to recharge. And
absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Are there any other issues that revolve around anxiety in children that you think, you know, parents need to be aware of?
Well, you know, it often can lead to addiction. You know, a lot of kids or teens will start using drugs or whatever they're using to simply feel different. And I think that's a problem. And I mentioned earlier that anxiety can be a buzzword. But, you know, anxiety, you know, we tend to forget that anxiety is a normal bodily reaction. If somebody feels anxious about something, well, there's probably a reason they feel anxious about something. Now, of course, we've been talking a bit about anxiety disorders, things like, you know, PTSD or generalized anxiety disorder or OCD. Sure, those are carved out. But when someone says, I'm anxious, I say, well, what are you anxious about? You know, because it may be your body telling you something. There's something going on in your life. And I remember one young lady who said, well, what are you going to give me for my anxiety? And I said, well, let's think about what's wrong with that sentence. You know, why is it that you have to medicate away what you're feeling? And further, why is it my responsibility to medicate away what you're feeling? You know, she didn't like that question very much. But it turns out that just any discomfort, she was terming anxiety, and society's trained her to say, if she goes to a doc and says I have anxiety, well, my goodness, she gets a prescription for Xanax, and then she doesn't feel particularly anything. She just feels relaxed all day. Well, that's not a normal state of being. There are things that should make us anxious. So I think that's sort of that mentality of feel something, take a pill is very, very dangerous. I think we need to just tune in and know that, you know, hey, your body's telling you something. What's the underlying cause of that anxiety? And again, that can lead to addiction.
So the anxiety is your brain's way of getting you to change your behavior in a hopefully in a positive way. But, you know, our response with in the addicted world is in a very negative way to get rid
right.
of anxiety.
Right. I mean, some people, anxiety is their buzzword for saying they just don't feel right, or they want to feel different. And my point is, well, why do you need, what's going on in your life that needs to change so that you don't have this need to seek some different feeling, you know?
The talk part of psychiatry, why that's effective.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a lost art. It's a lost art, isn't it?
Well, it's expensive and it's very time consuming and difficult to get, but, you know, it's real and it's very valuable.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, correct. Dr. Andy Farah, thank you again for sharing your wisdom and experience with my listeners and me. We always benefit from your insights. Please come back and make some more PEDcasts, won't you?
Yeah, let's plan on it. I always enjoy these. Thank you so much.
Well, this is Dr. Andy Farah and Doc Smo, hoping that all parents will hurry to help soothe their children's worry. Until next time. I would like to thank the following people for their assistance in the production of this podcast. Dr. David Jaffe, the voice of the introduction. Robert Beezer, the composer-arranger of the intro music. Ann Gesner, my wonderful content editor. Benjamin Smolin and Jerome Moof, the talented musicians who produced this delightful theme music. Sarah Smolin and Nathaniel Horlick for their digital wizardry. And Wendy Smolin Esquire and Seth, the Rocket Man Barrister Jaffe, for their inspirational guidance. Thanks, guys.
By listening to this PEDcast, you agree to all of the terms and conditions found at the DocSmo.com website. This DocSmo.com PEDcast is informational only. Dr. Smolin does not diagnose, treat, or offer specific medical advice for your child. For specific medical advice regarding your child, consult his or her healthcare provider.